Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, my name is Tracy Ann Oberman and welcome to Trolled. This takes my experience of being trolled on Twitter and turning it into something positive, interesting and hopefully empowering. Every single person I've invited on this show is somebody whose stance I have admired, if not for their politics or their opinions, but for their sheer bravery. Today's episode has got Graham Linehan on. Graham, a brilliant writer, more awards than you can shake a stick at. Father Ted, IT Crowd, Big Train, you name it, he's done it. Graham has taken a stance on a subject that he hasn't got any skin in the game, as it were, but he has ended up in the eye of a massive Twitter troll storm. And I'm fascinated to see how that happened, why that happened, and how it affects him. We're here today to talk on Trolled about Twitter, particularly, and having a strong opinion on social media and getting trolled for it. You were one of the early adopters of Twitter. How did you? And we're talking particularly about Twitter because it's as a medium that I understand.
Yes.
And you're on a lot. How did you start on Twitter?
So I opened an account, and like everyone else, I didn't understand it. And then Jonathan Ross tweeted me and he said, is this you? Is this your username? And I said, yes, it is. And I thought, oh, well, that was interesting. And I went into Twitter and I looked at my Twitter page and I saw my follower count start to rocket up because Jonathan Ross had tweeted that it was me. And I was looking at it and I suddenly realised everything I say will go to these people. 7,000, 8,000 people, you know, 10,000 people, everything, they will all hear what I say. And that's when it clicked with me.
Right.
And
was that early doors, sort of 2007?
I was a medium adopter, I'd say. I was, you know, a lot of people had jumped on before me. But yeah, and, you know, and then it allowed me to become more of who I actually am, because up until that point you're just known as a writer and the person behind these shows, but I've always been very political, I've always been very interested in fairness and things like that, and Twitter was a good place to fight these battles, really, you know.
Did you acknowledge that early on, that suddenly you realised this was a vehicle to put a view out or whatever?
Well funnily enough, one of the earliest things that happened to me was, actually, people may not know this or even remember it, but I created the We Love the NHS hashtag.
Did you?
Yeah. I was sitting in Starbucks and I was really sick of all these Fox News people slagging off the NHS. So I just tweeted about it and added that hashtag. Next thing, David Cameron is saying it in a speech.
Oh my goodness.
Which kind of took away from the point.
But I
kind of realised its power very quickly. The other thing I did that was very revealing to me was I did a joke where I pretended that Bin Laden had been watching the IT Crowd when the raid happened. And I told people that there was a video and you could hear the theme tune of the IT Crowd. And I had, and people were believing me. And I didn't really, at first I thought, oh, people are so silly. How could they believe this? And I encouraged it. I wrote to some French followers and I said, could you tweet about this in French so I can retweet, you know, and they did. And then I retweeted it and said, look, they're talking about it in France. and I pretended there was this huge kind of, all this news was coming from different directions. I totally fooled people. And it wasn't until later that I realised that's very easy to do.
That's false. You were the first adopter of false news.
Someone said it to me on Twitter. They said you invented fake news, and they said it in a very negative way, and I was a bit annoyed. But then I thought, oh yeah, I did. I didn't invent it, but I certainly didn't help.
You could see, from what I remember of you, you seemed to grasp the uses of Twitter.
For me, we were all
just watching Bake Off together.
For me, I still think that, I mean, there's two my thoughts on this have developed. My first thought was it was almost as if the human race had developed telekinesis. Is that the word? What's the one word? Telepathy. That suddenly we could all hear each other's thoughts and we were all connected to each other in a way that the human race had never been before. And I thought that this is a major step, you know. But I used to say to people, you know, when often there'd be snarl-ups, like I was moaning about a comedian on TV one night. It was Jack, what's his name?
Whitehall.
Jack Whitehall, you know, who was just new and I didn't like his posh accent and I wrote something really unpleasant and I was drunk, so I fucking included a photograph, which I didn't mean to do. So I've been spending the last few years of my life apologising to Jack. But the thing about it is, I think things like that, the way I described it to people, it was like the human race had grown a tail.
That's such a good analogy, yeah.
You know, and we all had this tail, and we weren't used to it. So when we walked across restaurants, we were turning around and smashing bottles and glasses off the tables, you know. And we hadn't evolved enough to use this incredible new power that we had. And I used to think that was kind of a cute analogy, but now I think of it as, it's even more truthful, but it's not like we evolved a tail. It's more like we evolved a gun on our shoulders that can shoot at people without us realizing, you know?
Now that's interesting, without us realizing. Mm. I've got a quick question, going back to the Jack Whitehall tweet, because this will then lead us into other issues. But, you know, you almost trolled Jack Whitehall, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. And I genuinely didn't mean to. I was trying to say, I was trying to subtweet, I guess. I was trying to say, oh, there's someone on TV at the moment who's terrible. And then I thought, no, I'll do a blurry photograph or something like that. And then I did both at the same time, so I just screwed it up, you know. But that was something I realised as well, possibly way too late, that I needed to keep my opinions on other people's comedy or other people. And I like Jack. I like Jack's stuff now. I know what he's up to now, and I didn't at the time. But I realised that he can't really do that. And I realised as well that a lot of people respect me, or respected me. This was the old days. and my words carried weight.
They did.
Yeah. I try to ease off on all that sort of stuff now. I don't, I generally don't tweet about things if I hate them, like cultural things,
right,
a film or whatever. I generally try and stay positive, you know.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
When did Twitter but you were very involved with the Twitter joke trial, I remember.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, it was a guy who was saying, you know, I'm late for my plane. Maybe I'll phone in a bomb threat, something
That's
like
right.
that. And it was, you know, it was obviously a joke, and an obvious joke because of the stupidity of the way this particular system worked, got passed up and up and up until finally he was prosecuted. So, you know.
But it went really high, that case.
It did, yeah.
And
it
that
was a big, major thing.
And I remember that the angle at the time was you and Stephen Fry, and I think Al Murray was involved in it.
Yeah.
That this feeling of you can't take away freedom of speech on this platform, because this platform is all about being able to be witty in 120, 140 characters.
Yeah, but also when someone does a throwaway joke to a friend, you can't, you know. You can't bring down the full weight of the law on them, because we are all capable of making that mistake of saying, you know, there's a really horrible story. It's one of the saddest stories in this internet age of this guy who was playing an Xbox game with his friend, And in the chat, he said, oh, you know, because he was so annoyed with losing a game. He said, I'm going to go into school tomorrow and kill everybody, you know. And his life is ruined. His life is absolutely ruined. I've lost track of where the thing was, but the last time I heard, he was in a maximum security prison.
You're joking.
Or something. Yeah.
For that one comment?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, the as I say, the evolution thing, no one's used to it. And we're all stumbling about making terrible mistakes sometimes and getting into trouble for them, you know.
When did Twitter and the concept of being piled on by trolls turn on you?
It was when I defended Kathleen Moran. Kathleen Moran wrote something and I made a mild defense of her. I said, it's bollocks, you know, she didn't say anything wrong. I had 2 weeks of the most corrosive. And the thing is, that kind of abuse is hurtful because it comes from the left. And when it comes from the left, because I'm left wing, it's more painful and it feels more hurtful. And you fight against it. Now I realise it's all bollocks. You know, you
do
don't,
you? Because yeah. That's what's hurt me on a lot of my issues have been about the people that I should feel comfortable with.
Yes.
And be able to even discuss differences turn so viciously on you that they give you no place to be there.
Yes, that's essentially what's happened to me with the trans debate. But now, like, basically the thing that I get a lot is people just saying bigot and transphobe at me. But it for the most part it bounces off me. When someone with a verified tick says it, then I take note and I'm collecting a few names on my little list. Pike.
don't tell them.
But I'm going to, that's a different matter. Well, you know, that's people who really should know better.
Well, I was going to say, so I remember you would always, you know, you are hugely loved, hugely respected. Your opinion carried weight. You would occasionally make comments that you obviously thought, oh, shit, I shouldn't have slagged off Jack Whitehall. That's a bit trolly in itself, but I didn't mean any harm by it. And then I remember that time with Kathleen then suddenly you were getting a lot of negative comments towards you.
Yes.
But that wasn't on the trans issue, was it?
No, it wasn't. But it was the same type of people. There is a brilliant article that everyone should read called The Vampire's Castle, which is about the left-wing call-out culture, where, you know, the purity politics of it, you know, the everyone must have the same view and
God, that's so true.
And there's no diverging from it. And when you diverge from it, you get piled on much worse than, like, for instance, there's a right-wing commentator, Ben Shapiro, who's a moron, but he is able to look like an intellectual because he's stating very obvious things about the trans debate. You know, same things that a lot of left-wing people are stating. But the thing is, Ben Shapiro never gets piled on. You know, because he's a man and he's a right winger, you know, so they leave him alone. But any like Martina Navratilova mentions it, she gets the full weight of the attacks.
Is that because we expect it in right wing commentators, so therefore we don't even bother with the fight? But when it's our own,
it's partially due to that, but it's also because the people who are most dangerous to these you know, kind of reverse fascists, let's call them, the people who are most dangerous to them are the heretics, you know, people who are supposed to be on side and they're not. They are the ones who get isolated and picked off. Like, I tweeted something recently where I said, not one woman in prison should be abused because of trans identifying or male people identifying as women moving into the female estate. I did a list of these things. I wrote this thing and, you know, you look at it and it's 20 years ago, this would not have been a controversial thing to say.
I have to say, personally, I don't know enough about the trans issue and I can't comment on that. And nor is this podcast for me about that. How aggressive were the trolls on this subject?
Oh, completely. I mean, there's a few things that add to the aggression. One of the things is that, I saw Sharon Davis, I think, dealing with this today, where someone said, because she's speaking out about the trans women in sport, someone said, it breaks my heart to say this, but she wants to kill my child, so she is evil. Because a lot of these people have been told by trans activists that people who have any opinion that diverges from the party line want these children to kill themselves, because that's the again, false information that's been spread.
It's interesting you say that, because I noticed that a lot of people tell me when I find something misogynist and anti-Semitic, I am told, as a Jewish woman who has, that I'm completely wrong.
Yeah.
That I don't know what anti-Semitism is,
yeah.
That I'm working for a cabal, that, you know, all the things that you're talking about, being shut down but not being listened to. So maybe this is a troll mentality, which is there is no room for nuance or debate.
Yes, and perhaps there is this might be an interesting area to get into, but I do think a lot of I'm sure you've noticed this as well, but I do think that a lot of talk about Israel and Israel's actions is often cast as anti-Semitic by the Israeli government.
Yeah, but I think one can criticise Israel, and you have done many times, and I completely agree with that, is when you cross into the vernacular of Nazi.
Yes.
You know, it's that Nazi vernacular. It's Gaza is a terrible place, but it's not Auschwitz, whatever you
Absolutely.
May call it.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
cannot spray the Warsaw Ghetto wall, which is an open grave for Jews, and then dignify that, you know, it's like spraying, you know, all the things that you and
yeah.
I would have discussed over the years. But you can absolutely criticise the Israeli government and policy. But as a Jewish woman, I should not be held responsible for a government that I don't vote for, a country
yeah,
that I don't
exactly.
live in. And in many ways, people like David Baddiel, who gets it all the time, it doesn't even identify with Zionism.
I know, and he's talking about general stuff, and someone did it to John Ronson when they went to see John Ronson. Someone started lecturing him about Israel. He didn't even talk about Israel
absolutely.
During the thing. And I said, "Well, I was really annoyed. I was in the audience. I said, what was it about John that kind of made you start talking about Israel there, about Israel's actions?
Totally. And that's the thing. That's where this frothing, what do you call it, like the righteous anger of
yeah.
I am on the side of right,
yes.
therefore your opinion means nothing to me. Do you think
I do think that the trans activists have seen the way that Netanyahu and his cronies have framed the argument, and they're doing a similar thing.
Do you explain
yeah.
that to me?
It's putting the word phobia at the end of a sentence, at the end of a group. So for instance, if you talk about your opposition to the sex trade, right, your people won't say, "Oh, Graham Linehan is opposed to the sex trade or to prostitution." They'll say Graham Linehan is whorephobic. You know, if you are talking about
what
Russia,
what are you talking about?
Yeah. If you're talking about Russia, RT, the Russia Today,
yeah.
they're constantly accusing people of Russophobia. You know,
what about Islamophobia then?
Yeah, all of it. Yeah.
Listen, I'd get rid of Netanyahu tomorrow and get rid of all settlements tomorrow, and let you know.
Yeah.
I agree with you very much where you come from on that. But how has Netanyahu brought around phobic as a term? Because I don't see it.
Well, no, he didn't actually use the phobic ending.
Yeah.
But the charge of anti-Semitism used against every critique of Israel's actions.
Do you think he does that? I think what
Netanyahu.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I'm not sure if he does it himself, but
or his people around him.
Yeah, and the AIPAC as well. I do think do that a bit. You know, I think there's stuff that what's that woman Omar thingy is going through at the moment it feels like that. It feels like there is no legitimate way to talk about Israel according to certain people.
I think that there's a legitimate way of criticising Israel without having to delegitimise it and say it has to be wiped off. I would say that we can agree on.
Oh,
you can
absolutely.
Criticise it without delegitimising
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The thing that shocked me on this subject is when I was getting attacked by people, I mean really attacked by people with a Palestinian flag and the red rose,
yeah.
And then I would get horrific abuse. Endlessly, thousands of them. And then I would go behind the scenes. The people that were the most frothing at the mouth Palestinian activists, once you found out who they really were right-wing, far-right,
yeah.
EDL, Nazis, proper Nazis.
Yeah.
Hiding
yeah.
under the banner. Do you think that happens with the...
I think there's a lot of... there's definitely MRAs involved in this who are MRAs are men's rights activists. There's definitely them involved. You see a lot of anime avatars, which were also used in Gamergate. Gamergate was a big the last big anti-female misogynistic right-wing campaign.
What was that?
It was a bunch of right-wingers who... It started off with this woman called Zoe Quinn, who was... This lunatic ex of his, of hers, wrote a screed that was designed to go viral, where he basically accused her of sleeping with people for good reviews and all this sort of stuff. All of it turned out to be nonsense. And then that became a thing where basically any single woman who worked in the games industry was singled out and attacked. They used tactics like swatting, which involves phoning the police and saying, with your address, and saying, someone in my house has a gun. Can you come? And they send a SWAT team. Hope, and you know, people have had their dogs killed by this, because the first thing they do when they come in is kill the pet. You know, so
I'm looking at Tom, the producer, who's in the room.
Yeah, look,
and
up,
we're like,
look,
wow, this is, you're taking the trolling to a whole other world. I didn't even know. I feel like I've entered a portal within a portal.
And they were able to do this as well. Again, it's very similar to the trans stuff that's happening now. They did it in such a way that everybody was so confused with what was going on. A lot of the people within Gamergate actually thought it was a consumer movement about reviews or something.
Yeah.
The joke was, they would call it, it's about ethics in games journalism, you know? And these ethics in games journalism were resulting in women having to change their address, you know?
Give me a little bit of gestalt here. If you were in the, taking the, because we are broad-minded, open people, because you are a fantastic writer, you understand characters. So somebody's sitting here and they're talking about you from their point of view. What would they say? Being accused of being a troll, how would they argue where they're coming from?
When I said earlier that we haven't evolved with Twitter yet, I think this new power that we all have, this telepathy that mm-hmm. we all have, we don't know quite how to use it, and we're very vulnerable to certain things. We're very vulnerable to misinformation. We're, you know, look at the vaccine misinformation mm-hmm. that's kind of, you know.
Well, look at all the misinformation.
All
if
the
you
misinformation.
Only because
but,
the other
but there's
thing,
some really dangerous stuff.
But
like
don't
the vaccine
you think
stuff.
As well? It's because, you know, we are of an age where you were taught to read everything. You read everything. I read everything from the Daily Mail to the Socialist Worker, because then you can make an informed decision. If you live in your echo chamber, which is very easy to do now, why are you laughing at me?
No, I'm only because I have a thought about this, which is, you're absolutely right.
If you only get your information from an echo chamber,
yeah.
and you only get your information from absolutely the same people around you and the same pieces of the same publications, you will never change your worldview, because you've only been fed one agenda and one
yeah.
opinion.
Yeah.
How do you then get challenged? And maybe that's what makes a troll, because they've only ever had one set of opinions, therefore anybody outside that view is wrong and evil.
Yeah, yeah. And also, well, the reason I was laughing was because also spell check makes people look cleverer than they are. So you can read something and you can think, whoa, this person knows what they're talking about. No. They can just spell. And they can't even do that. You know, these are just people who, you know, the thing puts a little red underline thing. Oh, better change that. And suddenly they look like they know what they're talking
You're
about.
You're the third person that's talked about trolls and spelling.
That's the
thing.
Because
a lot of them don't even bother to...
We used to know green ink. We used to think green ink, that's the kind of thing that tells you who people are. But now everyone looks like they're reasonably, you know, articulate, you know, but they're not. They've just got lots of stuff that they can copy and paste and spell check and all this sort of stuff. And everybody, but you know, the way I describe Twitter is remember the way people would say don't look at the comments on a
yes.
YouTube video and stuff like that. But Twitter is like opening a comment section on your life, you know. So you do something. Oh, my cat did this, and the next thing you got 1,000 people telling you you're Hitler.
Do you read the comments from the trolls?
No, I've changed my settings, so I only see replies from people who follow me.
Oh, you know, you told me right,
and
okay.
That's a real echo chamber thing. But I had to do it because the moment when I decided to really jump into this debate with both feet, I think I might have been on morphine. I had a touch of cancer, it was fine. I tell people this is my joke. It was ball cancer, you know, and they just threw it away. So as long as it never finds out my address, I'm going to be okay. But I think I might have been slightly morphined up when I was. When I first decided, I'm going to do this now. This is going to be my thing. You know, I really did make a conscious choice. I said, this is going to be my thing. I'm going to tweet about this and I'm not going to be scared. And I think it was because I was on morphine.
Did you know how bad it was going to get?
No. if I had, I would have been a lot more careful. There's certain things I would have been more careful about because I didn't expect them to come after my wife.
And did they?
Yeah, they printed her address. They printed an address to do it, you know.
Have you been physically threatened?
No, but people at Pride in Norwich have had signs saying "fuck off, Gremlin," and you know, and all this sort of stuff, you know. So I've had some nasty stuff, you know. But it's the way the trans stuff works is it's not physical threats, it's threats to your employer.
Yes.
It's all that sort of thing. Yeah.
Oh, I've had that, yes. They write to every employer, they write to every TV station, theatre. Rachel Riley gets it, David gets it, you know, they try and make you on. But I'm sure that's what Nazis used to do.
I didn't realise
you got that. Yeah, very much so. What happens if they're listening to this and everybody that I've had on this, including you and me, we're perceived as the trolls? Do you think that's possible?
Oh, absolutely. I'm considered, as I said, when you asked me the question about how people perceive me, people see me as someone like someone said the other day. What about the trans woman who the police cautioned? Police cautioned Graham Lennon about. Police didn't caution me. They phoned me and they said, "Could you block her on Twitter?" and I said, "She's already blocked. I blocked her ages ago. I don't want anything to do with this person." You know, and that has become Graham Lennon cautioned for harassing a trans woman, and it is the major narrative about me, you know. And the other day someone pointed out, I can't say too much, but someone pointed out who this person I was supposed to have harassed was, and the person they replied to immediately changed to, "What about all the others?" You know,
it's
like, "What others? Who and it just becomes a Chinese whispers thing.
Yeah.
of basically, when people defend me now, the reply will simply say something like, "You must be joking."
You
know,
we have exactly the same thing. So actually, I'm getting a picture of, it doesn't matter what the issue is, but the trolls who take comfort from working in an organised group, I think, and take comfort, they, because their echo chamber says that you're a pariah, they seem to think that the rest of the world thinks that you're a pariah. So when anybody says, "Oh, actually, I can kind of agree with him."
Yes, and they have to be, crazy. Those people have to be isolated and dealt with immediately. That's what happened to Emma. You know, they just, you know, and also, but you may not have had this, because this is where it slightly diverges from, I think there's an element with the trans debate of social engineering, right? A lot of the people who work in tech are identifying as trans, and you have things like the block list, which blocks TERFs.
We're on a Jew list. Jew block.
Oh,
list.
Are you? Yeah,
yeah, there's loads of us on.
Yeah, I'm on a TERF block list, and TERF stands for Trans Exclusionary Radical Feminist, which is bollocks because feminists do not exclude trans men because they see them as women, you know. But anyway, sorry, that's another thing. But these block lists. First of all, I'm blocked by a lot of people who used to follow me on Twitter. And second, the other thing that happened was I had, from people I really admired, Kate Beaton was one, Michael Cooperman was another, I think he has a trans child, a few other people. Michael didn't do this, but Kate Beaton did. But Kate Beaton wrote an open letter to tell me to reconsider. Like, what? Reconsider what? You know? I got loads of direct messages from people saying, I don't know what's going on. Why are you saying all this and stuff like this? And these are, you know, not stupid people, you know, but there's the social engineering aspect comes from a feeling. I think they've managed to communicate to everyone who wants to be on the right side of this issue that any discussion is dangerous.
Yeah.
The merest mention of the problems to do with this are there, you know, like one of the reasons I jumped into it with both feet was because I faved a tweet that said something like, "We totally respect trans people's right to exist. They deserve the same human rights as everyone else. But there are some areas where their rights are impacting on women's rights, and we need to talk about that." Right? Mm-hmm. I thought that's reasonable. Faved the tweet. I had a bunch of people saying, "See, you faved this tweet. Why did you do that? You know, you know, that's transphobic. You know, the person who wrote that is a transphobe," and stuff like this.
So in another world, somebody else would go, "Oh my gosh, I'm getting lots and lots of negative tweets. I can't handle it. I'm out of here. Yes. Sorry, I tweet like that and delete. I'll come off it for a week.
Yes.
People like you and me and my other guests, we're right on in there. We carry. What made you carry on fighting? And how did you did? Did you answer those people, the trolls, individually?
No.
Did you think I want to debate them?
When I was coming out of my morphine haze, someone tweeted to me, "I wish the cancer had won."
Oh my God.
So I thought, maybe I shouldn't be reading these messages while I'm recovering. So I found in settings the thing that I only get replies from people who follow me. And I've had that turned on since last May. So basically, whenever I do get into a disagreement with someone, it's one-on-one. It's quite mature, if you know what I mean. It's like a discussion, you know. And I don't see all the people who want me to kill myself.
Does the opinions of swathes of people, many of whom could be seen as trolls, affect your day-to-day life?
Oh, well, it has affected my day-to-day life. Like, basically, the way it works is that if they can't stop you talking by just writing something horrible, then you get the private DMs saying, please reconsider. Then you get the open letters saying, I'm so disappointed.
Where do they put the open letters?
Oh, you know, on their blog or wherever, you know. When that doesn't work, you get phone calls from the police, like I did, you know. When that doesn't work, they sue you, as someone is suing me at the moment. When that doesn't work, they come after your wife, which they did.
You've had troll and then some, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been, you know, I've had a year of solid harassment. The overall effect is it's been really, really horrible. And the thing about it is, the main thing that all these people telling me to stop did was it made me more determined to keep talking.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast app. Apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter at FriendsWF.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
How would you say, what would be your top three things about being able to deal with being trolled and piled on?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, all I would say is try and have conversations with people in real life, you know, like speak to them about it. I know for a fact a lot of people are feeling uneasy about this, but they're terrified of saying anything at work because their careers could be ended. You know, I know two policemen who were brought in and they were literally questioned, do you think trans women are women? And they had to say yes before they could leave the room, you know. So, you know, and there's all sorts of implications to do with social work, to do with women in prisons, sport, all these things. they're clear, they're obvious. We all know what they are. We should be allowed to talk about them without people jumping down our
throats. Well, I think that's the thing. We should be allowed to talk about anything without people wanting to kill us,
yes,
rape us, murder us, silence us, make us unemployable.
Yes. And you will find people saying that us having this conversation is the same as wanting to do all that stuff to trans people.
I can categorically say, in my naive knowledge, I absolutely don't want to do that to trans people, and I support their rights. But I think it's become, listening to you, Graham, has been very interesting because it's not a subject that I know a lot about. So I really appreciate you educating me and seeing your experience on Twitter from your point of view. And I'm sure, you know, everybody that we've talked about has got another point of view, but it's frightening that there are so many similarities about shutting down debate, intimidation, frightening people so that people like us, don't keep going on social media, yeah, up against a barrage of abuse, yeah, day in and day out, because we believe in what we're saying is right.
Yeah. You know, what can you do except keep going?
I have to say, you have more awards in your cabinet at home. You look bloody brilliant. You're super talented. You're a voice of reason for many, many people. And you're very brave.
Well, thank you. Well, that's very kind of you.
Thank you for coming on today, Gray.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Trolls are a modern phenomenon, and don't be frightened. And I'm hoping that if you get anything out of this podcast, it's seeing people you've always admired in a different light, that it empowers you to be able to speak up, speak out, and realise that being trolled is a badge of honour. There are certain ways of dealing with it, and just don't be frightened into being quiet. Thank you so much for being with me, Tracy Ann Overman, on this episode of Trolled. See you next week.
Dear podcast connoisseur, it's entirely evident that you know your podcast stuff. Why else are you here? That's why I'm here to recommend Smirchpod.
What a helpful chap.
Now, Smirchpod is a podcast celebrating all the Bond films and Bond-related films by those who enjoy, hate, or, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Rain.
If he's half the genius they say he is, we're in for real trouble.
So why not join me as I delve deeply into Bond and Bond-related films, tackling a different film in each episode with an exciting guest by my side. I promise you'll have a lovely time.
That's putting it mildly, 007.
Oh, shut up, Q. Put your fingers away, for God's sake.
I hope you don't snore, Q.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.